See a little difference.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. This week's Parshas Bei, Tavshin Ayin Tes. We begin on page 344 in the Art Scroll Chumash, Perek Yud, Pasuk Chav Aleph, chapter 10, verse 21. Vayemer Hashem el Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Netayatcha l'shamayim, stretch out your hand over the heavens, v'yichoshech al eretz Mitzrayim, and let there be darkness over the land of Egypt, v'yameish choshech, and the darkness will be tangible. Vayet Moshe said al shamayim, Moshe stretched out his hand over the heavens, v'yichoshech hafeila, and there was a thick darkness, v'chal eretz Mitzrayim, and all the land of Egypt shloshech shamayim for 3 days. A man did not see his brother, and no man arose from his place for all 3 days. And for all the children of Israel, there was light in their dwellings. So basically, it's dark for the Egyptians, it's light for the Jews. So the Medrash points out the following. The Pasuk says, the pasuk says, "Ulachol bnei Yisrael hayu arba meishveisam," and to all the children of Israel there was light in their dwellings. So the Medrash points out, we know that where the Jewish people dwell in the land of Goshen, that's where they were dwelling. And the Medrash points out, it doesn't say "Ulachol bnei Yisrael hayu arba eretz Goshen." It doesn't say there was light for the Jewish people in the land of Goshen, ela meishveisam, but rather in their dwellings. And based on that, the Medrash says the following. Anywhere that a Jew went, meaning even when a Jew entered Egyptian territory where there was darkness, there would be a light that would enter. And would make light for him that which was in the barrels, the boxes, and the treasures. As we know, during the days of darkness, what were the Jewish people supposed to be doing? They must be staking out the homes of the Egyptians so that before they would leave, they would ask the Egyptians for their gold and silver. The Egyptians would say, I don't have any gold and silver. The Jews would say, sure you do. It's in your upper drawer, it's under your mattress, or it's hidden under your house. How do the Jewish people know that? The answer is that during the times of darkness, where the Egyptians couldn't stop them from searching everything out, they went looking, they went searching. But as the Medrash says, they were able to see everything. You know, they had that X-ray vision. They were able to go ahead and see into everything, including that which was closed away, as in barrels, in boxes, in treasures, in storage houses. All these things were visible to them because although it was dark for the Egyptians, for them it was light, and not was it just regular light that they were able to see, but rather a light that even allowed them to see into hidden places so that they should be able to find everything that they could ask for from the Egyptians before they would leave. Okay, an interesting miracle. But the Medrash concludes, Va'aleihem Nemar, and regarding them, the Pasuk in Tehillim says, Ner l'ragli devarecha, your words are a candle for my feet, v'ar l'nsivasi, and a light for my path. That's the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says, your words are a light for my feet, v'ar l'nsivasi, and a light for my path. Now let's stop for a second and examine that Pasuk. That Pasuk, a Pasuk at Tehillim, that it says, your words are a candle for my feet. What are your words referring to? What do you think they're referring to? Your words are a candle for my feet and a light for my path. What kind of words do you think we're referring to? This is David Melech talking to Hashem. Your words are a light for my feet. What are your words?
Direction or something?
Get a little bit more specific.
Gives you a light for your feet.
Who? What words? What words do you think they are? Come on. What words? I'm not trying to trick you here. Just what you hear those words, right? Forget about the Medrash. You hear the words. The words of the Pasuk are Ner l'ragli devarecha. Your words are a candle for my feet, va'or l'nsivasi, and a light for my path. Which words do you think the Pasuk is referring to? The words of the Torah, the mitzvahs. Your words, Hashem. Hashem, your words of the Torah, are a candle for my feet and a light for my path. That's what the Pasuk, Pasha Pshat, that's what the Pshat of the Pasuk is talking about. If so, now we have a problem. What's the connection to what happened here? What happened here was that Hashem allowed them to see everything so they could find everything. The Pasuk says, regarding this, the Pasuk says, your words are a candle for my feet and a light for my path. What words were there here? Here there don't seem to be any words. Here it's in, to allow them to be able to find everything that we give in the light. How does that connect to the words of the Pasuk of that your words are a candle for my feet? Your words are a candle for my, are a light for my path. What is that going to do with what happened here? I understand that, but again, the Pasuk is saying your words are my candle. Here, what words were your candle? The words weren't the candle here. The light was a candle to be able for them to see what was going on. What words are involved? Says the commentary of the Etz Yosef, the commentary on the Medrash, that the words that we're referring to here is the Shadvar Hashem Sha'amar Shayetz Burchushkodol Hayolam La'ar. You know what words were the light? You know what words brought about this light that allowed them to find everything? The promise that Hashem said to Abraham that when your children leave, they will leave Berachush Gadol with great riches. In order to be able to fulfill this, the light was there wherever they went. Meaning, because where did this light come from? Why did they merit this light that would allow them to be able to see everything? The answer is because Hashem had promised that they have to leave with riches. In order for them to happen, for that to happen, they've got to stake out and find everything that the Egyptians had tucked away. And therefore, that's what the Pasuk is saying. Your words are a light for my feet. Which words? The words that you said, Ba'achreichem leitzu b'chush gadol, they will go out with great riches. Because of those words now gave them, was what now gave them the light. They should be able to find everything so that those words could be fulfilled. Okay? So now, and therefore now the Pasuk works well. The Pasuk works out very well. The Pasuk says, Ner l'ragli devarecha, your words were a candle for my feet. Your words, the promise that the Jewish people would leave with great riches, were the candle. They brought about the light so that I could find everything that I needed to find. Okay, so the Medrash works out well. But now let's try to look at things in a different way, let's say a little bit from a different direction. So the pasuk of Ner l'ragli devarecha, your words are a candle for my feet. Those words are going on, including this episode of the Jewish people having light to find all the hidden things of the Egyptians. And what brought about that light? Your words. Which words? The promise of Rechush Gadol. The pasuk is not only talking about that. When the Pasuk talks about your words, the pshat of the Pasuk, the simple interpretation of the Pasuk is your words are referring to the words of the Torah, not just this specific case, but all the words of the Torah, all the words of the mitzvahs. So now, if we see from this episode of the plague of darkness that the word of Hashem was the cause for a light to enable them to have the word of Hashem be fulfilled, that's exactly what happened here. There was a promise, they will leave with riches. How is that promise going to be fulfilled? Well, it's got to make it happen, right? This promise, these words, have to bring about that these words should be fulfilled. How did that happen? By giving them a special light that they could see everything. Now, taking that same concept back to the basic pshat of the pasuk, back to the basic context of the pasuk, that we're talking about the mitzvahs, we're talking about the word of Hashem, all the words of Hashem, then that means that all the words of Hashem have the ability to give us a light, to give us the power, to give us the ability to fulfill them. The fact that we have the mitzvah itself, that in itself is going to be, is going to give us the energy, the ability to do the mitzvah, at least once we decide to do it. And when we accept to do it, meaning there's this concept, the same way we find that the word of Hashem gave them the ability to fulfill the word of Hashem, then the pasuk talks about all the words of Hashem are telling us, would be saying that by every mitzvah, by everything the Torah says, those words itself, the fact that those words itself are to be fulfilled, those words itself will give us the energy to be able to fulfill those words. And I think that, and the way that we can explain this is with a very interesting idea from Rav Chaim Volozhiner in his commentary on Pirkei Avos. Now, there is a custom that when we study Pirkei Avos between Pesach and Shavuos during the summer months, there is a custom that before we begin the Perek, Avos is a Mesech that's a tractate in Mishnah. There's five Prakim in Mishnah. We add another Perek of Raisa that we should get all 6 weeks between Pesach and Shavuos. But the custom when we the custom is that when we begin the Perek of that week, we begin it with a Mishnah that doesn't, but that's not part of Pirkei Avos. It's actually a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. And the Mishnah says, Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chaylek Leilam Abba. All of Israel have a portion in the world to come. That's our introduction to our weekly study of Pirkei Avos during the time of the year that we study a chapter of Avos each Shabbos between Shabbos and Shavuos and continuing through the summer. So on these words, Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chaylek Leilam Abba, all of Israel have a portion in the world to come, writes from Chaim Volozhiner his commentary Ruach Chaim, Hine Yodua, behold it is known, that when at a time when a person thinks, decides, lasseis mitzvah, to do a mitzvah, nasa rishuma lamala, that makes a mark, it makes an impact in the higher worlds. Umisoyer olav ar makif mehakdusha. And now there is awakened over him a surrounding light from holiness. V'seichech be'evrasai, it shades, it hovers over him. And the person is in the middle. He's surrounded by this light of holiness. And it is an aid and a support to complete the mitzvah. It's like you're sitting in the Garden of Eden itself. What better environment to push you at, to give you the support, to give you the motivation to continue doing the mitzvah. Vakadusha malbashtai, the sanctity cloaks him. Vayedei gemara mitzvah yoyser mischazik halavush. And now by completing the mitzvah, this cloak of light gets even stronger, it intensifies. Umeir, and it shines. Vahaar mistalik, and then the light leaves, achakach, afterwards. Ligan Eden goes to the Garden of Eden, v'zehu schari la'asid, and this is his reward in the future. So when you decide to do a mitzvah, a light of holiness comes down and surrounds you. You're like, as Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, you're now surrounded, you're like sitting in Gan Eden. And that now helps you and gives you the motivation and the strength and the energy to complete the mitzvah. When you complete the mitzvah, that light intensifies. It leaves and goes back to Gan Eden, and that's going to be your reward in the future. That's what it means. Every Jew has a portion of the world to come. The application to what we've been talking about is we see this concept where once you decide to do a mitzvah, the mitzvah is going to help you complete it. The mitzvah is going to help you do it. And perhaps that's the meaning here in the pasuk. Again, taking what we find by Makas Choshech, that Hashem's promise of, you know, that they'll leave with a big, with a great reward, that was what gave them that light to be able to fulfill it. And we say, and the Medrash says, the pasuk of Ne'aragli Devarecha, your words are a candle for my feet, is going on that. If it's going on that, then it would seem that we should apply that same idea to what the pasuk is talking about in Pshat, which is all the words of the Torah, that all the words of the Torah, those words themselves, they become the light, the energy to help us fulfill those words. That's what Chaim Volozhiner is saying. Once you accept to go out, once you accept upon yourself, you decide you're going to do the mitzvah itself now once you decide, there's going to be this light that's going to come down and help you complete the mitzvah. The mitzvah itself awakens this light that helps you do the mitzvah. The same way there was a light that enabled them to bring about the fulfillment of Hashem's word, here too, the mitzvah that you decide to do, that mitzvah now brings about that energy, that light, that helps you fulfill the mitzvah. So perhaps that is the concept that we can take from the Medrash to apply it to all mitzvahs, to all the words of the Torah. That once we decide to do it, once we decide to do the mitzvah, that thought of a mitzvah brings about a light that helps us complete, gives us the energy and the strength to complete it.
The question of the darkness, was that the main reason why we had the darkness?
That's one of the reasons for it, to be able to stake everything out, yes. Right. Yeah.
Because usually on the other, there's nothing we do really, if you have locusts or you have this and that.
That is true. That's true. Okay. The next pasuk, next thing. Let's now skip a few psukim, and let's go into the discussion of the Karban Pesach. Okay, take a look on page 352. This is Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph, chapter 12, verse 11. Hashem is telling Moshe to tell the Jewish people about the Karban Pesach. And the Jewish people are told to eat the Karban Pesach in the following manner. V'chacha teichlu oisai. And you shall eat it like this. You shall eat it in the following manner. Masnechem chagurim. Your loins girded. Na'alechem baragleichem. Your shoes on your feet. U'makelchem b'yetchem. And your staff in your hand. V'achaltem asab b'chipazin. You shall eat it in haste. Pesach hu la'Hashem. It's a Pesach offering to Hashem. So here the Jewish people have to eat the Karban Pesach, the belt's on tight, you're ready to go, shoes on your feet, walking stick in your hand, you're sitting there all ready to go, that's how you eat the Karban Pesach. Why was that the manner in which you have to eat the Karban Pesach? Why do you have to eat the Karban Pesach in that manner? Says the Sephardim a very interesting idea. On the words, Masnechem Chagurim, your loins girded, the Sephardim who says, Mizumanim Laderech, all ready to travel. Lahoyres to show, I'll be tochain bilti mesupak, to show a trust without doubt, Mikel Yisparach in God. Biyaisem achinim atzvam laderech, that they're getting ready for the trip, va'edim beis hakela, while they're still in jail. Imagine you're a person sitting in jail, he's being told, okay, 12 o'clock, you're out. So what does he do? He's already got his shoes on, his suit. He's all ready to go. An hour beforehand, he's ready to go. Why? Because he believes it's going to happen. If he wasn't so sure it's going to happen, he may not be getting ready so early to go out. He really wants to see the cell open up before he's ready to start going. But if you're ready to start going earlier, that shows that you have full belief it's going to happen, and since you believe so much it's going to happen, you're all ready to go right now because it's ready to happen. You have no doubts.
Except here they're told so.
Sure they did.
Rather than feeling it, believing it.
Excuse me?
Well, the difference with your analogy is that...
Now, in my analogy, they told him. They told him you're out, you're leaving.
Before that...
Well, they told him.
They told me you're leaving. Meaning the point here is...
But they didn't tell them, get ready to...
No. But he's getting ready. The point is, if you can get ready while you're still sitting in jail, right, that's because you're confident, you're sure, you're getting out.
Right.
Now, what's interesting is that the Jewish people had to show this. They already had 9 out of 10 plagues, right? They're being told about the final plague, and they're still being told to show, to demonstrate... that they have no doubt they're going to be redeemed. Apparently, it wasn't that simple, what was going on there. It wasn't that simple what was happening to Jewish people. They still weren't, there was a place for them not to be sure. But they had to demonstrate, right before redemption, they have no doubts. And how do you demonstrate that? Even before you're ready to go out, you're all ready to go, right? Loins girded, shoes on your feet, hat on your head, walking staff in your hand, because but you didn't get out yet. Don't you know how hard it is to get out? You're not even out yet. The answer is, Jewish people have to demonstrate, Hashem want them to demonstrate that you have no doubts, you have no questions. And the reason everybody Shalom asked for that is because, I would suggest, is because that's what you need for redemption. One of the main conditions for redemption is that you believe in it. You believe it's going to happen. You have your full trust and belief in the Ribbono Shel Olam that if he says he's going to redeem you, he's going to redeem you. If you demonstrate that, then you have the merit. So even over here, they were told, you're getting out. By midnight, Malchus Bucharis is going to come. Everyone's going to, they're all going to die. Pharaoh is going to come. He's going to say, get out. It was all told to you. It's told. It's, at the same time, it wasn't so simple. The Jewish people still had to demonstrate that inside they really believed it was going to happen. And once they demonstrated that, they had the merit for redemption. Because to merit the redemption, they had to have that full faith, that unquestionable trust in Hashem that it was going to happen. And therefore, this was the manner, says the Sepurnu, as to why they were told to eat in this manner. Now, the next thing I want to talk about, take a look on the bottom, last two words on the page, on page 352, where the Pasuk says, Shivas Yamim, this is, again, 352, Pasuk Tesvav, last two words on the page, Shivas Yamim, Matzah Yisrei, you shall eat matzahs for 7 days. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your home. Whoever eats chametz, that sum will be cut off from Israel, from day one until day seven. Okay, so the first part of the pasuk says, 7 days you eat matzah. And we know that we have a mitzvah on the first night. The Torah gives us a mitzvah on the first night to eat matzah. So, Reb Schwab, in his Sefer on Chumash, has a very interesting comment on this word called matzah. Right? Do you ever think about why it's called matzah? Where does the word matzah come from? Is it just the name of flatbread? You know, unchametz bread is called matzah. That's the name. That's the name the Torah gave it. Matzah. That's the name. Torah gave us the name. That's the name. But you know. Never thought about what's the etymology of that word. What does the word mean? Where does it come from exactly? What does it mean? So Schwab gives a very novel approach. And he says the word matzah is not a name of a type of bread, but rather, I mean it is, but it's not just a name of a type of bread. But rather it comes based on a word that actually means to struggle, to fight. Where do we find that? We find that in a pasuk in Shmos. This is in Shmos Chaf Aleph. Let's take a look at the pasuk inside. Take a look on page 422. This is Parshas Mishpatim, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Beis, chapter 21, verse 22. If men shall fight, and by doing that they hit, they collide with a pregnant woman, it causes her to miscarry, there will be no death to the woman. That person will be punished, and he has to basically compensate for the loss of the children in a monetary way. But what we want to focus on is that first word, yinatsu. Yinatsu means to struggle, to fight. Says Reb Schwab, you know where the word matzah comes from? Comes from that word yinatsu. The same way yinatsu is to fight, he says matzah, related to that, means a fighting, a quarrel, a fighting, a struggle. What's matzah going to do with struggling? Says Reb Schwab, because matzah actually symbolizes a struggle. When you put water and flour together, and they come together, naturally what happens? It becomes chametz, right? The chemicals start working, and the dough and the bread begins to rise. That's the natural result of when the water and the flour come together. What do you have to do in order to eat it on Pesach? You've got to impede that process. You got to make sure the dough is moving. You got to make sure that you put it into the fire quick enough. You basically have to hold back that natural reaction. That, in essence, is a struggle, right? There's two forces colliding. You've got the natural force of the combination of flour and water that wants to make this combination leaven. You want to make a chametz. That's the natural process. And you are the force that's trying to impede that, trying to stop that. There's a struggle. There's a struggle between you and the natural force of chametz. Chametz represents the natural progression of things. And matzah is where we say to that natural progression, not happening. We're stopping that. We're going against that. So matzah represents a struggle between us and the natural tendency. And that is what matzah is meant to teach us on Pesach. Because on Pesach, when we left Mitzrayim and we became the servants of Hashem, the point was that as Mechtam Elio points out, the primary servitude in Mitzrayim was not a physical one, rather it was a spiritual one. And that spiritual servitude was a servitude to the Yetzer Hara, evil inclination. That's what Mitzrayim represented. And now when we were going to be redeemed from Mitzrayim, the point was to be redeemed from being in the clutches of our natural tendencies. Matzah is that name, matzah. And how matzah comes about, the struggle between you and the natural force of chametz, that is what matzah is meant to represent and remind us of on Pesach. When we became the servants of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we now are no more just going to be enslaved and allow our natural tendencies to take over and to just progress and to go as they normally do. We have to be able to find the strength to struggle against that, to stop that process, to stop a natural tendency. And that's symbolized when we stop the process of chametz. We don't allow chametz. We don't allow the natural process of chametz to come about. And that is a lesson for us to make sure that we control our natural tendencies and not just say, well, nature takes its course. We react to our nature and that's it. We have to struggle against that. We also find that by carbonus, generally by a carbon, we don't have chametz by a carbon. Generally every carbon, every mincha, there are exceptions, but the general rule is that every meal offering that comes as a carbon, a mincha, is not chametz. Says Rabbi Schwab, it's the same idea. By a carbon, when we're trying to come close to the Ribbono Shel Olam, there's no place for chametz. There's no place to, we don't want to have that idea of just the natural tendencies of coming about, the natural processes going about. But rather, we are going to struggle and struggle against those natural tendencies, not to allow them just to come about, but rather to control them in the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, the word matzah relates to the word struggle, because it's meant to remind us of our struggles against the natural tendency, which happens when you make matzah. There's a struggle between the natural force of the combination of water and flour and you trying to stop that. And that is a symbolism to what we now took upon ourselves as we went from being slaves to Egypt to being servants, slaves to the Ribbono Shel Olam.
It's sort of a metaphor.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, now, the next... Yeah, go ahead.
This paragraph from 55-54.
Where are we in Shemot? Where?
We started the original 354-355.
Yeah.
And it ends with what will happen to people who do not eat leavened bread.
Right.
And I don't understand what it means to be cut off from Israel from the first day to the...
No. First day to the seventh day is going back on the other
half of
the
Passover. So it's not that they're first.
For 7 days they cut off now.
Okay.
Right. No, it's confusing, but no, that's what it means. Yeah. Okay. Now, actually, the next thing I want to talk about is that second half of the Passover, where it says... Again, page 354, pasuk tes vav. Ki kol oichal chametz, for whoever eats chametz, v'nichras nevashim Yisrael, that's how we'll be cut off from Israel. Chametz is a very severe prohibition. if you eat chametz intentionally on Pesach, knowingly, intentionally, you know there's a prohibition of chametz, you eat it anyway, you could be chayiv karis. Karis is premature death, whatever way karis means. On a deeper level, karis means your neshama is cut off. Very severe punishment for eating chametz. So I want to share with you a very interesting thought that I saw brought down from Rabbi Avigdor Nebenzahl, who lives presently in Yerushalayim, the former chief rabbi of the Old City, rabbi of the Old City in Yerushalayim. And there is an explanation brought down from him to understand the severity of chametz as to why it carries a punishment of death. And I will share with you how I understand it. Okay? So now, the Sefer HaChinuch, when it talks about chametz, specifically in the mitzvah, not that we should not have chametz in our possession on Pesach. The Sefer HaChinuch, we know, always has a Sheirish HaMitzvah, always talks about the root of the mitzvah, a way of understanding the mitzvah. So Mesharshei HaMitzvah, from the roots of the mitzvah of not possessing chametz, in order to remember the miracles that occurred during the Exodus from Egypt, we should remember what happened to us then. Because of the rush to leave, we had to bake our loaves as matzah. They weren't able to delay to remain anymore before it could be with enough time for it to become chametz. The Jewish people left in a rush, in such a rush that there wasn't enough time for their dough to rise, and therefore the bread that they baked, instead of rising, was matzah. It didn't become leavened. It was matzah, and says the Chinuch, that is what the mitzvah of chametz is meant to teach us. Now, whenever we talk about the mitzvah of eating matzah, that's what we're used to hearing, right? In the Seder, we say that. Why? Matzah shana v'echlim? Why do we eat matzah? Because of the fact that the Pasuk says they weren't able to sit, they weren't able to remain long enough for the bread to rise. The Chinuch is telling us that's the concept behind chametz too. It's the same idea. Why do we not eat chametz on Pesach? Same idea. To remember that we had no chance for our bread to become chametz. Because we were rushed out so quickly from Mitzrayim that our bread wasn't able to become regular chametz bread. That is also the reason for chametz. So we really have a mitzvah of matzah, a positive commandment, an act by which to remember this concept that we were rushed out of Mitzrayim so quickly that our bread didn't rise. We have a mitzvah of matzah, a positive commandment. And then we have a very severe prohibition of possessing chametz that also is meant to remind us that. And if you think about it, chametz is all-encompassing, right? The whole Pesach is about chametz, right? You never forget about chametz on Pesach. You know, your mitzvah of matzah is the first night. You know, you'll eat matzah afterwards. It's not the same mitzvah. But when you talk about chametz, chametz is what encompasses the whole Pesach. And chametz, too, is about remembering how quickly we had to leave Egypt, that there wasn't enough time for the bread to rise. Now, the question is, what was the rush? Why was it so important to rush? Why is it important to remember that we rushed out? So the Mefarshim say, the commentaries explain, is that the reason why we had to rush out was because of the fact that if we would have stayed any longer, we wouldn't be able to have left. The Jewish people in Egypt had degenerated spiritually to a very low level. Spiritually, they were about to be lost. Their neshamas were about to become so corrupted they could never be redeemed and never become the nation to receive the Torah. And therefore, the Rebbeinu Shalom rushed them out before it was too late. Before it was too late, before their neshamas, before their essence become so corrupted that they wouldn't be able to be redeemed, the Rebbeinu Shalom rushed them out. So when we eat matzah and we refrain from chametz, the point is to remember that. Remember how the Rebbeinu Shalom rushed us out before it was too late. Which in essence could be a lesson in, again, expressing our appreciation to Hashem. Part of the appreciation of His taking us out of Egypt and making us His people, making us His nation, was there was a very important detail in that. We were on the precipice of spiritual oblivion. And the Baruch Hashem made sure to get us out in time enough. And it had, and where did that manifest itself? It manifested itself, or it came out, in the fact that our bread couldn't rise. Our bread didn't have enough rise because we're in such a rush to get out. Why are we in such a rush to get out? Because otherwise we would have been lost and never be able to redeem. And now when the Rebbeinu Shalom took us out just in time, he took us out just in time to be redeemed. And not only that, he guaranteed us, says Nebin Zal, that we would never fall to such a level again. We would never fall to such a level that we could be lost again. Cheres Olam, as we say in Davening, eternal freedom. We would never fall to that level that we should fall into oblivion and therefore never be able to be redeemed again. Okay, so the idea of Chametz is to remember that rush, that being rushed out, and the fact that we were saved. And we can take that as a lesson of, again, expressing our appreciation to Hashem. Rebbe Nebenzal says, but there's another lesson to learn from this. Because there's a question that all the commentaries ask, which is, it's a question, it's an obvious question. All right. So they had to leave so fast because by leaving so fast the bread didn't have enough time to rise, right? How much more time do you think they needed for the bread to rise? What do you think, they have to be there for another 3 hours for the bread to rise? They didn't have to be there that much longer for the bread to rise. A couple of minutes probably would have been enough for the bread to rise. So they couldn't stay for another few minutes. The answer is no, they couldn't, like we just said. You know, they were on the precipice of spiritual oblivion. If you're standing at the edge of a cliff and you make one more, and it's windy up there, and you say, oh, I'm just going to stay up here a little bit longer, right? And then the big wind comes, you're in big trouble. Or, I'm just going to stroll around here, and you're right at the edge of the cliff, you're strolling around, one step, and you're gone. The Jewish people were on the precipice of spiritual oblivion. No, they couldn't wait any longer. They couldn't wait any longer. Because if they would have waited any longer, they would have been done. So, to me, the lesson, or I'll call it the direct lesson, that comes from this is a very important lesson that, you know, a person can find themselves in a bad spiritual state. In a bad state. And they kind of get us with this, and you know, every time we're in a bad spiritual state, you know, we get a thought of, you know, let's cut this out. Let's stop. Let's stop doing this. Let's straighten out. And then you say, I'll wait till tomorrow. Do a little, I'm already doing it. What's going to happen if I do a little bit more? I can wait till tomorrow. And the answer is, maybe not, right? Because if you're in a bad state, you may be at the edge of the cliff. And if you don't stop now, you may come to the point of really, really damaging your neshama. That's what was happening to the Jewish people. If they waited any longer, they would have been gone. What we see from the bread, what we see from the fact that the bread couldn't rise, that we had to come out at this point, we couldn't wait another few more minutes, was because there's this concept that a few more minutes can make a very, very big difference. That little bit of time that you think is inconsequential can be extremely consequential. Look at the Jewish people in their pitiful spiritual state that they were in. A few more minutes, they would have been gone. That's an important lesson for all of us, that when we find ourselves in a bad state, to say, all right, you know, if I stay this way a little bit longer, it won't make such a difference. It could make a very big difference. And that is part of the severity of Chametz. Chametz carries the punishment of Karis to show that the prohibition of Chametz is so severe because there's a very important lesson in Chametz. If you ignore the lesson of Chametz, that means you're ignoring the lesson of ignoring the idea that another step, right, to continue just doing a little bit more in the wrong manner, could actually make all the difference in the world. So the punishment of Karis, a premature death that comes with Chametz, is to stress this very important lesson, that the same way Chametz wasn't able to happen by Pesach, because if it would have happened, we would have been lost, a few minutes more, we would have been lost. And the same thing could happen to us in our own lives. If we keep, we delay improving, if we delay our tshuva, we delay straightening our lives out, we could actually, even just doing a little bit more, could actually make the difference between a tremendous consequence in what in the state of our neshamas. Now, just to take this another step, a little bit of a step further. We also know, again, in understanding chametz and matzah, that, you know, it takes, you know, your matzahs have to be baked within 18 minutes, right? You got 18 minutes to make your matzahs. If you have 18 and a half, you have 19, you have chametz, right? Which means the difference between matzah, which you can use for a mitzvah, that will gain you nitzchias eternity, right? The difference between that and then karis, and then chametz, which can give you karis, is very small. The difference is very small. Well, if we can take the theme, that theme that we had by chametz, right, in the sense of the Jewish people having to get out in time, if we could take that same theme and carry it over to the difference between chametz and matzah, and we know that Chazal do point out that chametz and matzah, right, they both have a ches. No, sorry. They both have a mem. They both have a tzadi. And the difference is one has a ches, one has a hey. What's the difference between a ches and a hey? A very little difference. There's a very small difference between chametz and matzah. If we can take that lesson of chametz that we said before, that a little bit more can make a tremendous difference in your spiritual state, and we can carry it to the difference between chametz and matzah, then what we're actually saying is that, you know, you could be on a good path. Even if you're on a good path, right? The matzah's baking, right? You're on a path for being all right. But you're not careful. You're not careful. And you allow things to go to get out of hand. You've gone over in a short period of time from a mitzvah to an aveira. Something that gives you eternity to something that can destroy you spiritually. And that could be a lesson in life too, that any time in life, every point of life that we're on a spiritual precipice. And that even in a situation where we're going on a good path, but if we're not going to be careful and we're going to allow ourselves to stray just a little bit, it can make a very big difference. We may not see it because, again, it's in a spiritual realm. But if we're not careful, we could be going on a good path and one wrong turn could actually have a very, very negative effect on our neshama, as we find the difference between chametz and matzah.
The 18 minutes, is that...
But actually, nowadays they do much quicker than that. They don't wait for that. But that is my understanding of this lesson of chametz that Reb Neventhal is pointing out. What do you want to say?
I was trying to understand about the urgency.
The urgency, yeah.
Yeah. So what was it in their lives that warranted that they must have been deteriorating constantly?
Yes.
So that was not that urgent 6 years before then or 6 months before
then?
Yeah,
I don't know how to answer that question.
Especially because at that point, Moses was there.
Are you asking why did it take so long to do?
No, that is a hard question. We don't know. But yes, I'm trying to understand why an extra 5 seconds would have made a difference. Because if anything, their level should have gone up because they saw miracles, they knew about Hashem, and it's...
Excellent question. I don't mean to minimize when I say that's a standard question on this discussion.
Okay.
Okay.
So what's the standard answer?
The standard answer is, right, that number one, we don't really have an answer as to why exactly at this point. You know, why on the 15th of Nisan at this point of time? Why at that point of time? I don't know if we have an answer to that. But the other question...
If it just, they go down, I understand that.
Right. The other question would be that, you know, the spiritual state they were in already after all the years in Egypt, and just being in a place of Egypt that permeated with evil, right? As great, as much as that, as the mitzvah of taking the carbon Pesach was, and the faith that they showed in doing so, which was clearly a merit that they needed to do so, it was like it was the spark that said there is some kind of hope. But the strength of evil that existed in Egypt was so strong that it was still dragging them down. They were like in a struggle. They were trying to pull themselves up, but they were still being pulled down. And they really couldn't do it on their own. They had to do something to be able to merit for Hashem to get them out, but they really couldn't fight against the force that was working against them just by being in Egypt. So that would be the answer to your question. Okay, let me just before we run out of time. What do you say? I'm sorry?
If they hit the lowest spot, and during the nine plagues, they see the Jews are more in a better position, maybe God can see they could change.
Yeah, but he had, but he had, right. No, that's a very good point. He sees, he saw there was some kind of ray of hope, but they still have to get out of here.
Right, but they
still have to get out. Okay. Just want to conclude with an interesting story that I saw. And this story involves Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. And it relates to the parasha because in the parasha, when the Torah talks about the laws of Karban Pesach, so the Torah says that if you, in order to eat the Karban Pesach, you have to have a bris milah. If you're not circumcised, if you don't have, if the mitzvah bris milah was not performed on you, you may not eat from the Karban Pesach. So I read a story here about Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. He one time came to St. Petersburg to join a conference of Rabbanim. And the question was like this. The issue was that many, it seemed that even in Reb Chaim Soloveitchik's times, right, there were many assimilated Jews or Jews that were straying off the path. Jews who identified as Jews, but they didn't keep mitzvahs. And even though now, I believe, most Jews will make sure their children have a bris, there was a point of time that you had people identified as Jews, but they considered bris milah archaic and ancient and barbaric, and they would not perform it. And it seemed to have been a problem, an issue, that there were a number of people doing this. And there was an opinion, and many Rabbanim held, that these children that are not circumcised should not be included in the community's Jewish register. It seems that every community had a Jewish register, who's Jewish, and based on that register, you were taken care of as a Jew. If you're not in the register, then you would not be known as a Jew. And there were people who wanted to leave these children off the register. And the parents, when they would see that, and the hopes were that when the parents would see that, they would make sure to circumcise their children because they didn't want their children not to be identified as Jews. And we'll see at least one example of what difference being identified as a Jew would make. And Reb Chaim was very against it. He's very against it. He says, you know that without a bris milah, right? Without a bris milah, you don't eat the Karban Pesach. But you're Jewish. How can you not include them as Jews? How could you basically exclude them from being considered Jewish when they're Jewish? Okay, not a bris milah, but they're Jewish. Another Rav at the point told the story about it, how in Warsaw there was a certain Jew who refused to give his son a bris. The child became ill and died, and the community leaders did not permit the child to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. That's how far they went. And it was meant to show, to warn people, if you don't give your child a bris, look at what could happen. They felt that they needed to do that to convince the people, the parents, to give their children a bris milah. And Reb Chaim Soloveitchik got up and said, look, again, without a bris milah, you can't eat a carb in Pesach. Without a bris milah, you can't eat a carb, you can't eat truma. Where does it say you don't get buried in a Jewish cemetery without a bris milah? Why are you punishing the children because of the parents? Punish the parents somehow. But to punish the children, they didn't do it, it's not them. It's not them who did it. By not treating them as Jews, you're punishing them for something that's not their fault. It's a very interesting insight in the sense that, you know, how everybody was of the mindset that, look, we've got to do something about this problem. This is going to solve the problem. This is what's going to solve it. This is going to get the parents to do it. True, the children are, are being, so to speak, punished for fault that's not their own. But we got to get the parents to give them a bris milah. Said Reb Chaim, you don't do that. You don't punish the children for the actions of their parents.
But this is a common principle.
It's a common principle that at the end of it, what do you mean? Which principle? That what?
That you don't punish children because of...
True.
So how come all these people...
Because apparently they weren't seeing it as a punishment for the child. Apparently they were seeing it as, look, we're trying to get him a bris milah.
Can you have a bris milah after you die?
You could, but I mean, Reb Chaim is saying that's not, you know, necessary. I mean, the mitzvah wasn't done. Again, there is such an idea of doing that. But to actually, if a person died or whatever, for a bris milah to be done and before he's buried, there is such a concept. That's a very good point. Here, the point was they didn't allow the child to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Why? To set an example. That's what they felt. They had set an example. Reb Chaim said, you can't do that. You can't do that to the child because of the fault of the parents.